Great. Well, thank you again. So last time, well, so the first lecture, we promised we'd talk about elliptic curves. We did. That led into the second lecture, which was supposed to be about K3 surfaces, but they ended up being elliptically fibered, so that was fair. This is the third lecture, which is supposed to be about Calabi-Yau manifolds, and K3 surfaces are bleeding into this lecture. And again, I promise there's a reason. Okay, I'll just leave it at that. You can fill in the gaps yourself. So let's pick up where we left off. At the end of last lecture, we introduced this M polarized, M equal H plus E8 plus E8, lattice polarized K3 surfaces. And we described a coarse moduli space for said surfaces. First, a normal form, given as a singular quartic in CP3. The minimal resolution of this ADE singular quartic is a canonical way an M-polarized K3 surface. And the coarse moduli space is given in perfect analogy with the Weierstrass normal form by a weighted projective triple now, ABD, in weighted projective 2-3-6 space. Okay, and before we had G2 and G3 in weighted projective 2-3. The fundamental invariants generalizing J, which was G2 cubed over delta, are now A cubed over D and B squared over D. Okay. But what I didn't have time to talk about last time, and this was suggested by questions from the audience as well, was the Hodge theoretic story. So what is the parallel Hodge theoretic story for M-polarized K3s? Well, first of all, the transcendental lattice that has been mentioned several times, Tx, is the orthogonal complement of H plus E8 plus E8 in H plus H plus H plus E8 plus E8. And although it's not entirely trivial, you can check that up to relevant lattice automorphisms, the complement will always have to be H plus H. Okay, computation is not always that easy, but it is here. The period space, I don't know, I should call it period domain, but anyway, this is, I'll call it capital omega. It's all the little omega in, well, it's the projectivization of the complexified period vectors. Now, periods of 2-0 forms, holomorphic 2 forms on algebraic curves are going to be 0, so it's really just the transcendental part that's picking up the periods, as we also saw in earlier lectures. You tensor with C, you projectivize, subject to the Hodge-Riemann relations, omega, omega is 0, and omega, omega bar greater than 0. Now, in this case, and this is no surprise because of the Picard-Fuchs computation we described last time, omega is, in fact, isomorphic to two copies of the upper half plane. Okay, and this classifying space for Hodge structures, weight 2 of this type, actually becomes, well, if you have the quotient by a group I'll call gamma, which is just the integral isometries of Tx, okay, and this is isomorphic by interpreting omega as H cross H, as H cross H quotiented by, well, you can already guess what the answer should be. We said that Hodge theoretically, in terms of the data of Hodge theory associated to the Picard-Fuchs equation, which is not the full data of the filtrations, but is some portion of that data. That our K3 surfaces are naturally associated to a pair, really a product, of elliptic curves. That is, an abelian surface that splits into a product of two elliptic curves. So you can certainly expect that there ought to be an action of PSL2Z on each factor here. But remember, order didn't matter, right? It's the abelian surface that splits as the product, not the ordered product of elliptic curves. So in fact, what gamma translates into here is the group PSL 2z cross PSL 2z, and then let's see if I can do this in parentheses right, semi-direct product z mod 2z. Okay, so what is the Z1-2Z doing? It's actually exchanging the two factors. Okay, so this is what it's sort of the stupidest case of a Hilbert modular surface. That's the way to think about it. If you want to think of it in terms of embeddings in other spaces you might care about, such as the Ziegle modular threefold, this would be the Humbert surface H1. So it's a very, very simple simple structure. Now, in the case of elliptic curves, the next thing we did was we wrote down a period map. And the period map here has to map similarly from the moduli space of M polarized K3s to this domain. And I'm just going to call it H cross H, like I said. Now again, what is this map going to be? Well, first of all, what are the fundamental invariants of the on the modular invariants on the classifying space here? Okay. Well, based on the nature of the action here, the PSL2Z cross PSL2Z acting individually on each factor, and the Z-mod2Z exchanging them, well, if we didn't have the Z-mod2Z and we restricted to one factor, we'd just get back the J function. We'd recover the theory from the elliptic curve case that we had before. So you might say, oh, it's two J functions, one for each upper half plane, but not quite. You have to do that little symmetry, Z-mod2Z symmetry. So it's elementary symmetric functions in the two J functions, and that would be their sum and product. So sigma, and I'm going to put a tau here and a u here, so sigma of tau u is j of tau plus j of u, and pi of tau u is j of tau times j of u. Okay. And then there's an identification via, I guess I can do it here, via sigma, I'll put this up, identification via sigma and pi of, oh, I'm sorry, I should have written the quotient. Let me give a name to this quotient. And we're going to go all the way down to the quotient. I'll call it that. Call it that, because it's a little modular surface. So this maps H C2. Okay. Now, in the case of elliptic curves, we express the inverse period map in terms of E4 and E6. And here, well, we're going to piggyback on that result, and we get the inverse period map. So, period minus 1, H, M, M, and it's given in terms of an ABD triple by pi to the 1/3, pi minus sigma plus 1 to the 1/2, 1. In other words, in terms of the fundamental invariance in the moduli space, A cubed over D and B squared over D, it says that A cubed over D is pi, and B squared over D is pi minus sigma plus 1. Okay, so a very, very clean clean result. Now, again, in light of questions last time, especially the question about why not C, let me just quickly mention that this result does generalize in ways that will be discussed in other lectures in this conference. So you can take the lattice N, which is H plus E8 plus E7, for example. Okay, I rank 17 lattice. And as I said before, you just add the monomial C times X V squared W to the normal form. Certainly seems rather innocuous, but the net effect is that you get a moduli space of N polarized K3s of the form a weighted quadruple ABCD in weighted projective 2, 3, 5, 6, such that Cn equal to 0 or Dn equal to 0. And the period mapping goes from the moduli space of n-polarized K3s directly to, well, when you trace through the Hodge theoretic construction, it's the Ziegle upper half space of genus 2, quotiented without any special level structure by the full SP, depending who you are, 4Z or 2Z, I mean 4x4 matrices. and so the inverse period map must be given by Ziegle modular forms. And in fact, it is in a ridiculously beautiful way. It's given by E4, that's A, that's the Ziegle Eisenstein series. E6, and then with very simple prefactors, 2 to the 12 times 3 to the 5th, Agusakust form C10, and 2 to the 12 times 3 to the 6th, Agusakust form C12. Okay? Well, I don't need 35. That's the relation. So Noriko raises a good point, which is that Agusa's theorem is not only that you can generate your Ziegle modular forms with E4, E6, C10, and C12, it's that there's also a C35, and that there's a degree 70 relation relating C35 to these others. Well, the degree 70 relation is the discriminant locus for our moduli space. So it comes from geometry. So not only does the structure of the ring of Ziegle modular forms arise naturally, even this this non-trivial relation of degree 70 pops out. So more will be said about this in lectures to come, so I'm not gonna talk much more about it now, other than the fact that there's another generalization to a lattice, I don't know, we call it S, I don't know what to call it, H plus E7 plus E7, and geometrically speaking, in terms of the geometric ingredients necessary to prove these results, and I'm not going to have time to talk about the proofs in any detail, but geometrically speaking, the existence of elliptic vibrations of the necessary sort, the so-called alternate vibration that we talked about, and the actual construction via a second section, a two-torsion section, of the appropriate Nikulin involutions, this all still applies, not just in the M-polarized case, but also in the N-polarized case, and also in the S-polarized case. Now, I mentioned at the very end last time that there is some difference between these because there's, in complete generality, a way of associating to a K3 surface an abelian variety called the Kugel-Satake abelian variety. Now, this construction is not algebraic. It's a highly transcendental construction involving Clifford algebra and the integral structure on the transcendental lattice, and it's a very, very transcendental construction. On the other hand, in each of these cases, the abelian surface you're getting in the M-polarized case, product of two elliptic curves, is the, well, simple components of the abelian variety here. This is a ridiculously large abelian variety. It's a Clifford algebra construction, something like dimension 2 to the 19. It's absurd, okay? It's absurdly large. But if you start with a relatively high lattice polarization, it simplifies rather quickly. The transcendental lattice is small, but the actual, which means that the simple components of the Kugel-Satake, but the Kugel-Satake construction will always produce a 2 to the 19, whatever dimensional. Well, you can take the reduced. Right. So I would call that the reduced version. And if you take the reduced version, right. So, and the reduced version is going to be, reduced Kugel-Satake abelian variety, you're literally going to get the product of two elliptic curves in this case. In the N-polarized case, you're literally going to get a principally polarized abelian surface. Technically that and its dual. Let's not dwell on it. In the S case, as I mentioned last time, you actually get an abelian fourfold. Okay? And you might say, well, what do abelian fourfolds have to do with K3s in the same literal sense as we've actually taken the Shioda-Inesy construction, that is, take an abelian surface, construct its Kummer, right? Construct a Nikulin involution on the Kummer, quotient and resolve, and there's the K3, okay? Well, there's a shortcut here that still applies, and that's that this three-parameter family of Kummer K3s sits naturally in a four-parameter family of K3 surfaces. They're no longer Kummer, But if you remember the classical construction of a Kummer surface as a double cover of CP2 branched over six lines, tangent to a fixed conic, now remove the conic condition. You remove the conic condition, and you get the Mikulin involuted partner to these K3s. Okay, so that's going to be the subject of Adrian Klinger's talk on the last day of the conference. So for those who have to leave early to go fet Joe Harris, and that's a paper of ours in IMRN. You can read it online. I would beg to differ. He's my student now. Her master's student, my new PhD student. So this is all fine and good. And in fact, in each of these cases, as I said, there is a standard fibration and there is an alternate fibration, and the construction is absolutely uniform. You use the alternate fibration with the second section to construct the relevant involution. Okay, but having said all this, again, I want to reiterate, the normal forms seem a bit arbitrary. Okay, I said that the method of construction was to take a singular quartic. I said we could geometrically engineer the right kind, but at the end of the day, where did I get these monomials from? Right? I mean, you find them, right? So there's a much more organic source of these examples, and that's as toric hypersurfaces. Okay, and I mentioned this in brief in the first lecture, but let's let delta be a reflexive polytope, and its associated normal fan, sigma delta, and the associated phonotoric variety, p delta, defined to be the toric variety associated to the fan. Okay, so this is a phono toric variety. Strictly speaking, it has Gorenstein singularities, but let me just say it's a toric variety associated. Now, because it's a phono toric variety, the generic anticanonical hypersurface in what we'll call P delta tilde, because I need to actually resolve torically the ambient singularities, comes from a refinement of the fan, what's called a maximal projective crepant partial desingularization. And even though it's partial, that's the second P, it's good enough for the anticanonical hypersurfaces generically to be smooth. So this is anticanonical. And the generic anticanonical, so I'll say the generic X, is Calabi-Yau. So in the case where P delta is three-dimensional, it'll be a K3 surface. And in essence, because of this partial refinement, because of all the blowing up you've done, the enhancements of pick for the ambient space that comes from that procedure, the generic anticanonical hypersurface inherits a lot of algebraic curves. Okay, and so you are essentially geometrically engineering lattice polarization from combinatorics, which is the combinatorics of the original reflexive polytope. So the combinatorial structure of the reflexive polytope delta, which would just be a three-dimensional polytope in the case of K3 surfaces, this determines the lattice polarization. Okay. Still better, in all the cases we're considering here, the combinatorial structure determines both elliptic vibrations. Now, elliptic curves are Calabi-Yaus of dimension 1, and if the elliptic vibration is going to be determined torically, it's natural to expect that a reflexive polytope of the appropriate dimension will show up. And that's exactly what happens. If you take your three-dimensional reflexive polytope and you slice through the origin in such a way that the slice on the induced lattice is itself a reflexive polygon, then you get an elliptic vibration. Okay? And the best possible situation, combinatorially speaking, so the best case with regard to these vibrations is when delta admits both a slice by a reflexive polytope delta prime of codimension 1 and a projection respecting the normal fan structure onto this slice delta prime. Now, why is this the best case? Well, it's the best case from the standpoint of combinatorics because reflexive polytopes are called reflexive for a good reason. They're reflexive because there's a notion of polar duality that takes a reflexive polytope to its polar dual, which is also a reflexive polytope. Some up to the GL action are self-dual. Okay, but in any case, generally speaking, it'll take it to another. Now, this is great because, combinatorially speaking, if you take the polar, the slice becomes a projection, and the projection becomes a slice. Okay? So this is a marvelous situation to find oneself in. It's still more marvelous when you realize that Viktor Batyrev expressed the construction of mirror pairs of Calabi-Yau manifolds realized as anticanonical hypersurfaces in terms of this projective duality. I'm sorry, this polar duality. In other words, if you have a situation like this, where your anticanonical hypersurface is sitting in a polytope with this kind of slice projection, I call this a balanced toric vibration on the ambient P delta, then mirror symmetry is preserved fiber-wise. That is, mirror symmetry, which has no reason to respect holomorphic vibrations, actually respects the structure of the holomorphic vibration. That is, you can perform the fiber-wise mirror of your Calabi-Yau's lower dimension, and you thereby construct the mirror of the total space. Okay, so that's motivation then. Now, I've thrown around this word mirror symmetry. I'm really not going to... I mean, my job wasn't to give a course on mirror symmetry, but I do want to give you a sense, again, of what the original, very classical mirror construction looked like, and a translation into Batyrev's language. Now, I think in the K3 case, there will be a research talk by Sarti, which will talk about a still more modern version of a mirror pair construction, a generalization of work by Berglund and Hoopsch, Chiodo and Wan, and she will show that, in fact, all these notions are equivalent in the K3 case to the notion of mirror symmetry introduced by Igor Gogolchev. we're going to move beyond the K3 case now and talk about the classical Green-Plesser construction. And we're going to start with the generalization of the quartic mirror pencil that I wrote down last time. And it's just step-by-step the same, so this is going to be the quintic mirror pencil. Okay? So you start with the Fermat pentahedron pencil. So x1 to the fifth plus dot 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 plus x5 to the fifth minus 5 z to the minus 1/5 x1 to x5 equals 0. And then you quotient by a group G, which is Z mod 5Z cubed. And it's presented in the following way, alpha 1 through alpha 5, and Z mod 5Z to the fifth, such that the sum, I equal 1 to 5, alpha I is 0. And then you quotient by another factor, Z mod 5Z, that acts trivially because it's the diagonal action, and these are projective hypersurfaces. Okay, and the procedure is, of course, quotient by G and simultaneously resolve. So what you get from this procedure, by complete analogy with what we did before, is a family YZ called the quintic mirror family. Now, Noriko introduced the notion of the Hodge diamond, specifically in the case of Calabia threefolds, and she gave the, what was the British flag interpretation, the Union Jack interpretation for mirror symmetry, which I guess I have to embrace now that I live in Canada. But the quintic mirror family, just to make a comment, so if we call the original Fermat pencil as before X, and call this this family Y, then H11 of X, Z, again for generic Z, because there could be singularities, so there are singularities in the family, is 1, H21, so H11 is the size of the Kähler cone, H21 is the number of complex structure deformation parameters, XZ is 101, and the two are reversed. Y is the mirror. Y is what you get by quotient thing. Yeah, so this thing is going to be the XZ, and then it becomes the YZ via quotienting and resolving. So then H11YZ is 101, and H21YZ is 1. Okay? And that's at least plausible when you think about what's happening with the action of resolution, the act of resolution by singularities. Now, what is Baturev's take on this? Well, he reformulates it, as I said, in terms of anti-canonical hypersurfaces and toric varieties. And on one side, the anti-canonical hypersurfaces are very clear. They're just quintic hypersurfaces in P4. Simplest toric variety we can write down in that dimension. On the other side, what you're looking at is anti-canonical hypersurfaces in P delta, and delta is a reflexive polytope given by the convex hull of the following vertices. 4, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, 4, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, 4, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, 4, and minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, okay, which is a simplex. Okay. now, this would be the Baturev picture. Now, if you apply the Griffiths-Dwork method, either to the original pencil, where you take into account the action of the group, okay, so you're working with invariant periods, or directly applied in this hypersurface setting, the toric hypersurface setting, and there's a variant of that that does work, which Ursula may talk about in her talk on the last day. So there's two variants. There's the taking into account G action, or there's the as anti-canonical toric hypersurface. Okay. Or using the so-called GKZ, Gafonkopronov-Zelovinsky hypergeometric method. Doesn't matter how you compute it, the answer is always the same. And the answer is that the Picard-Phillips ordinary differential equation with Z as independent variable is a generalized hypergeometric ordinary differential equation. Specifically, it's the one that is satisfied by the 4F3 series, 1/5, 2/5, 3/5, 4/5, all the B's are 1, Z. Okay? and the period of the holomorphic 3 form is a generalized hypergeometric function of this type. So if you take the integral of your function which solves the Picard-Phillips differential equation about some indivisible integral cycle, that's invariant under the monodromy about Z equals 0, let's call that gamma naught. Then this is the sum, n equals 0 to infinity, 5n factorial over n factorial to the 5th, z to the n. Okay, now purists We'll note that I slightly cheated, and there's a normalization of z as z over 5 to the fifth that's in here, and that's with reason, because I want the differential equation in question to have regular singular points, not at z equals 0, z equals infinity, and some interesting number. I want it to be z equals 0, z equals infinity, and z equals 1. 0, 1, and infinity. Okay. Now, this procedure generalizes, and it generalizes in a rather beautiful way, and it's natural from the standpoint of Hodge theory. I know, I cheated. I told you I cheated. It's okay to cheat when you admit it up front. Okay. So, from the standpoint of Hodge theory, it's reasonable to ask, we have an example of a family of Calabi threefolds with the property that, call that zero, oh, I don't know where to put my points, zero, one, and infinity, with the property that you have regular singular points at zero, one, and infinity. And in the case of this family, I guess it's that you have singular fibers at two of those points, and non-trivial monodromy about the third, and you have a hypergeometric, so a generalized hypergeometric local system over this. And in fact, from geometry, we know we have an integral variation of Hodge structure. Okay. So the package coming from geometry, as I said before, I wrote this little picture. I said we have the geometric family of Calabi-Yaus, right? And that gives rise to the Picard-Fuchs equation associated to this geometric family, right? And in between was Hodge theoretic stuff, okay? So you lose some of the geometric structure at the cost of losing some geometric structure. You get a beautiful collection of linear algebraic structures called Hodge theory. And if you lose even more structure, you go all the way down to the Picard-Fuchs differential equation, which annihilates the periods. So in this space, I would say we have the integral variation of Hodge structure, for example. Okay. So what is the integral? Well, no, they're not going to have to see this because I'm going to cover it up right now. Okay. So you have the integral, and besides, this is what I wrote the first day. So what we have is a generalization here, and it's okay that the last line is covered because it's the most important one, and I have to write it again. So what we have is a generalization, it's a theorem of mine with John Morgan, which is a classification of integral variations of Hodge structure on the thrice punctured sphere that are compatible with mirror symmetry in a very precise way. The homological mirror symmetry conjecture has certain implications about the mirror variation of Hodge structure. And by simply axiomatizing those, we were able to classify these integral variations of Hodge structure over the thrice punctured sphere. Specifically, these are integral variations of primitive polarized weight 3 Hodge structures. Over the thrice punctured sphere, P1 minus 0, 1, infinity, with, well, okay, first of all, I want the Hodge type to be that of a Calabi threefold with H2 1 equal 1. So I want H3 0 to equal H2 1 equal 1. Secondly, we want irreducible monodromy. Next, we want about the point which is normalized to be z equals 0, we want maximal unipotent monodromy, t naught about 0. We want unipotent monodromy of rank 1, t1, about z equal 1, and we want the condition which follows from the monodromy theorem in algebraic geometry for geometrically occurring variations, t0, t1, to be quasi-unipotent. This is the condition that Radu mentioned in his lectures. Now, it's important to note that as part of this package, this Hodge structure package, we need to know that the Hermitian form H omega 1 omega 2 defined to be I, that's square root of minus 1, integral over our Calabi-Yau, which I'll just call X again, omega 1 wedge omega 2 bar, which is just I times omega 1, pair with omega 2 bar, the symplectic pairing, the intersection form, is, well, it has to be positive definite somewhere and negative definite elsewhere, and I'll tell you where. So positive definite on H3,0 and negative definite on H2,1. Now there's also the condition of positivity, the condition that leads to the upper half plane restriction in the case of elliptic curves. And this positivity condition is rather subtle. So I'll say positivity, okay, follows in all the cases that we constructed, all the cases we classified, follows from a geometric cheat. Okay? So the overall procedure for classification here was to classify the real monodromy representations, and then classify the compatible integral monodromy representations. And in order to check these Hodge theoretic positivity conditions, we illustrated for every one of the rows of this table a geometric family of Calabi-Yau threefolds, generically smooth, with these properties that actually realize the family. Okay? And then positivity follows from a result of Griffiths or general facts about variation of Hodge structure coming from geometry. So it follows from the existence of a family of Calabi-Yau threefolds with the Picard-Fuchs equation equivalent to the real variations of Hodge structure in that table. Okay. So to recap, yeah. Pardon? Yeah, so in fact it's analogous to the condition of lying in the upper half plane in the elliptic curve case. Right, it's a non-trivial condition. Right. Right. But I'm making the comment that we didn't check it by any other means. Right. So for instance in your list, right, I don't know how to check it other than illustrating an example. Right, but as far as I can tell, it doesn't actually. Yeah. The signature is known. That's true. That's true. I don't think the positivity result doesn't follow from Blakers and Heckman. At least John and I couldn't decipher that. Okay, so positivity follows from the existence of a family of Calabi-Yau threefolds with the Picard-Fuchs equation equal real VHS. Now, this is therefore motivation, if you need another motivation, to look for families of Calabi-Yau threefolds with special properties. That is, with the Picard-Fuchs differential equations of this type, of this hypergeometric type. Okay? You might have needed this motivation, you might not have, but in any case, there it is. Now, just for comment at this point, the results of this classification, well, there's 14 real variations of Hodge structure corresponding to the rows in this table. The order is, It's the reverse of the order in our paper. In any case, so this is the list. You can recognize right away some structures that we've already been talking about. If you look at this row here, 5-5, okay, you can see A1, A2, A3, A4 corresponds to the Petrarchic's differential equation for the Mira-Quintic family. Okay, 1/5, 2/5, 3/5, 4/5. If you look, however, at the last column of that table, you see that although there is one real variation of Hodge structure, there are actually two classified integral variations of Hodge structure. So from the standpoint of geometry, where do these come from? Okay, so question, where do the sometimes multiple ZVHS come from geometrically? In fact, given an example of that row, right, the actual quintic mirror family, it certainly has an integral variation of Hodge structure associated to it. But the result of the classification says it's not unique. This integral variation of Hodge structure is not unique for that differential equation, and therefore there will be another integral variation of Hodge structure. Can you get it geometrically? Can you get it geometrically from the one you've already got? Natural question. And the answer, actually, you can find in some form already back in the original paper of Green and Plesser. So Green and Plesser, remember, constructed this mirror quintic family by taking this Fermat pentahedron pencil, quotienting by an obvious symmetry group, and they quotiented by the largest group available. Okay. On the other hand, in their paper, they tabulated other smaller groups. Okay. And if you start with the Fermat pentahedron pencil, the thing I called XV, and you quotient first by the following free Z mod 5 Z action, given by X1, X5 maps to X1, mu X2, all the way up to mu to the fourth X5, where mu is e to the 2 pi I over 5, then you produce, again, this is on the side of quintics, a new Calabi-Yau, which still has H11 equal 1. We're not on the mirror side yet, okay? So that's the same as the H11 for generic quintic hypersurface, smooth quintic hypersurface. But H21 goes down from 101 to 21. All right. Moreover, the fundamental group of a quintic Calabi-Yau threefold is trivial, but now the fundamental group of these, pi1, is the free group you quote, or the group freely acting that you quotiented by. Let's see about 5 here. So, what about the mirror of this guy? Okay, that's the logical question to ask. And the Green-Plesser construction still applies to this guy. So, Green-Plesser construction still applies, and it gives you a Calabi-Yau, which I'll call the quintic, well, if I'm going to call this the quintic twin, not a great name until you realize that its mirror family will be the quintic twin mirror family, and that is a good name, okay? Quintic twin mirror family. And the quintic twin mirror family is going to have H21 equal 1, and H11 instead of 101 equal 21. Moreover, the Picard-Fuchs equation is the same as that of the quintic mirror. Okay, in other words, the same row there. Batyarev's notation. Well, in Batyarev's notation, the the polytope corresponding to this quintic twin family or quintic twin mirror family is again given completely explicitly. And it's again a simplex, I'll call it delta prime. And it's given by 4 minus 1 minus 1, 0, minus 1, 4, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, 4, minus 2, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, 2, and minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1. And if you stare at this a little bit, you'll see an index 5 sublattice of the full lattice Z4 that's being spanned. And this tells you that there's a realization of the freezing of 5Z action inside the big torus in the first case. Okay? So the moral here is that from this construction, the real variation of Hodge structure is the same 4F3 as before for the quartic the quintic mirror, but the integral variation of Hodge structure of the quintic twin mirror is distinct from that of the quintic mirror. Okay. So this gives you a hint as to how you might go about looking for geometric realizations of all of the entries in that table in the last column. Now, what I will say is that for the entries in the last column, from the standpoint of checking positivity, as I said, it's sufficient to find any geometrical example in the last column. Okay. From the standpoint of answering Griffith's big question of when does a variation of Hodge structure come from geometry, you need to find an example of all of the integral variations in the column on the right. Okay. So what are the results? Well, geometric realizations. Well, the first 13. So the first 13 real VHS are realized by either anti-canonical hypersurfaces in Gorenstein toric Bono fourfolds P delta, or what are called Neff partition complete intersections. So complete intersection Calabi-Yau's in a higher dimensional P delta. Okay, I can say that without restriction. The first thing to note about this statement is the number 14 does not appear. Okay, so the last entry in this table, which I will reproduce for you right here, has not been realized geometrically in this way. So 1, 4, 1 twelfth, 5 twelfths, 7 twelfths, 11 twelfths, and the last entry is 1. So there is a unique something, integral lattice, integral structure compatible representation in this class. If you haven't actually checked positivity, you don't know it's an integral variation of Hodge structure, and that's one motivation for looking for it. But also, just we have no geometrical families realizing this. Okay, so this is troublesome. Secondly, if you look at the integral variations of Hodge structure in the other rows, we have that all compatible integral variations of Hodge structure, except for, there's the last one, but all the compatible ZVHS except for the one we've already talked about, and the case MA equals 2, 4. So all compatible twin integral variation algebra, except for the MA equal 2, 4 twin arise from free actions by a finite group. Okay, so in other words, you take some standard anticanonical hypersurface, you find on a subset of the moduli space a sublocus on which a free group acts of the appropriate size. I'm not going to get into the details of the size of the group yet today, but and then you apply the mirror construction compatible with this. And it's a rather marvelous construction because it actually gives you, for instance, in this first case, with all the weights A1 through A4 being 1/2, all of this is a whole tower of structures. The biggest fundamental group that shows up among Calabi-Yau's in this case is the group of unit quaternions. So you're not even limited to abelian groups in this case. Okay. But again, there's this annoying except for MA equal 2, 4 twin, right? So I had correspondence with face-to-face interactions and correspondence with Duco and Sink and others about this many years ago, and also some physicists. And the physicists kept saying they found it, and my mathematician friends kept saying they hadn't, and the mathematicians were right. But I didn't really know why until talking to my new colleague, Zhi Chen. And what Zhi proved is that there does not exist on the family of double optics a free Z-mod 2Z action. And he proved it in a really nice way by reducing it to a similar statement for optic surfaces. And I'm not gonna sketch his proof or anything like that. But the point to remember is somehow that you can't use the same trick. Okay, you can't take the example you already have in that column and look for a sublocus admitting this free action and then construct the mirror partner to that. It simply won't work. Okay, so new techniques are necessary both to realize this variation and the other. Okay. Now, can you remind me? How much time do I have left? Because it's the 10-minute rule. I see. Okay, 10 minutes wrong. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say the punchline. Okay, and the punchline is I promised that all the K3 analysis we talked about would be relevant. So let's focus on this 14th case. Okay, and the observation is that the 14th case you can start with the structure of the generalized hypergeometric series that arises associated to this differential equation, and it looks like n equals 0 to infinity, 2n factorial, 12n factorial over n factorial to the fourth, 4n factorial, 6n factorial, z to the n. And if you stare at this, you can try to make sense of it as a 212 complete intersection in appropriate weighted projective space, and that turns out not to work. But what does seem telling here is the fact that you have 1, 1, 1, 1, 4, 6 in the denominator. Okay, and in fact, what you can do is you can look for a K3 surface fibered Calabi-Yau threefold with anti-canonical hypersurfaces in weighted projective 1, 1, 4, 6 polar as the fibers. Okay? Now this is clearly suggested by the structure of this function if you study these families. But it's moving beyond the construction we've been talking about. You have to really build a K3 surface fiber in Calabi-Yau threefold in this way. Now, what saves the day in some sense is twofold. First of all, it's that a Calabi-Yau threefold fibered by these can be constructed torically as an anticanonical hypersurface itself. And it can be constructed torically as an anticanonical hypersurface with the property that the K3 vibration itself is a balanced toric vibration, in the sense I talked about earlier. So, if you understand and appreciate mirror symmetry for anticanonical hypersurfaces in weighted projective 1146, and you understand enough about the global geometry of this K3 vibration on the toric hypersurface Calabi-Yau threefolds, you can do mirror symmetry naively fiberwise, okay, which is the Bossier approach. Let me just ask, does anybody remember, I think I mentioned it in passing, what are the K3 surfaces that are generic anticanonical in weighted projective 1146 polar? Yeah, they're M equal H plus E8 plus E8 polarized K3 surfaces. So we've solved Hodge theory. We have an effective form of global Torelli for these guys, given by explicit modular functions. It's given by, if you like, the A cubed over D and the B squared over D, or if you prefer, it's given by sigma of tau u and pi of tau u. And what one does is you start from an anticanonical hypersurface a rather stupidly constructed toric fourfold, and you follow your nose, but using always the lessons learned from solving the algebraic transcendental dictionary on every fiber, okay? And what happens is you go from your K3 fibered Calabi-Yau threefolds, to a special sublocus on which they're quite singular, but they're singular along a single nodal elliptic curve. This actually corresponds on the K3 fibers to the restriction that sigma B1, which is something Ursula is going to talk about by example in her talk on the last day. This is, remember, the singular locus. And then you have to perform a partial prepent desingularization of this. You can do this, and you get a Calabi-Yau threefold family with exactly two nodes. Okay. And now you're left with a puzzle, which Radu set up but didn't follow through on, which is how do you perform a small resolution of these two nodes? Well, he said how to do it, but what he didn't tell you is that if you want a small projective resolution of nodes on a threefold, this can get you into trouble, okay? So there may not exist a small projective resolution. You always know how to construct it. You blow this up into a P1 cross P1, you blow that up into a P1 cross P1, and you blow down on an appropriate ruling on either side. You have 2 to the number of nodes possibilities there, but it could be that none of them result in a projective manifold. And in this case, the answer is none do. Okay? The way you see that is that the symmetries on the K3 fibers allow you to produce an overall symmetry on the Calabi-Yau threefold. And this overall symmetry in the Calabi-Yau threefold exchanges the two nodes and produces elsewhere a crepently desingularizable Z-Mod2Z quotient singularity that you don't have to worry about. Okay. So what do you have left? What you have left is a one-nodal Calabi-Yau threefold, which, because it arose from a family which also has this action, is smoothable. And so by result of Clemens and Friedman, you know that that's Q-factorial. And Q-factoriality means you don't have this. So you could say, okay, great, we did this, we came close, but we didn't quite do it. You know, it's not a smooth family. Is there some lesson to draw from this? Well, there is a good lesson to draw from this. The good lesson to draw from it is that by a result of Namakawa and Steenbrink, a Q-factorial Calabi-Yau has a pure Hodge structure of weight 3. So in fact, the integral variation of Hodge structure has been realized through a family of Q-factorial Calabi-Yau threefolds fibered by M-polarized K3 surfaces. Okay? And I have to mention before I close that this is a major portion of the thesis of Andrei Novoseltsev, who just graduated from the University of Alberta, and that the toric geometry computations involved are horrendous and would not be possible without the implementation of toric geometry in SAGE that formed the other half of this thesis. So this is a cutting-edge computation, and it uses both unexpectedly, both the lattice polarized K3 theory that we've been talking about and sort of heavy computation in torus geometry. Thank you.